fucking happy hour. Ladies and gentlemen, from two houses away, Moby! My neighbor Moby's in the house.
So, does that sound like clinking glasses?
Yes, close enough.
Really?
What do you know about sound engineering? It's
like, you know what you're doing with this.
I shouldn't say it's a glass of water and a Nancy Pelosi pin.
You don't know how many mornings we talk about going to throw pebbles at your window to drag you down here. Although I understand you've moved four houses away as opposed to two houses away.
Yeah, up until about a week ago, I lived 40 yards from your house. Now I live 200 yards from your house.
Oh, well, all right.
Lucky
listen.
We got him.
Yeah.
I know.
Sean, obviously, like most men, he needs a little distance from me.
There's a giant dog demanding my attention. And I think, Stephanie, I think you're great. You can't compete with your giant dog.
I know. Fred, so, he is an animal rights advocate.
Fred. It has been so cool getting to be not just neighbors, but friends with you. And, oh, Fred, he's an animal rights advocate, but please don't call him or he will punch you.
I'm talking to the dog, just in case anyone's listening. It's talking to my imaginary friend who happens to be a 160-pound giant white dog.
Yes. Not 160. All right, we have so much to talk about.
Okay.
Because we frequently send each other Trump Russia stuff and just like with a little like hee hee lol.
It got big the other day.
Okay.
Yes.
Let's talk.
So Dianne Feinstein.
Oh, Di-Fi.
Released. Did you call it Di-Fi?
Di-Fi.
Okay, so
no
Di-Fi.
No fucks left to give.
Yeah.
80 fucking three. Survived a bullet. Fuck you.
And released the transcripts of the Fusion GPS. And the thing that, it was interesting because it came out and clearly like some of the news media, like Washington Post, made a big deal out of it.
Yeah.
But the public ignored it, which is sort of understandable because it's definitely like in the weeds political stuff.
Right.
But it's such a big deal because what's his name? The guy who started Fusion GPS who testified.
Simpson. Yeah.
He was under oath in front of the Senate. So everything he said is true.
Yeah.
Like there's no way for him to get out of a lie.
Yeah.
And that's what made, like, so that's why I thought it was really fascinating. Because it definitely.
Do we have psychic music? What's it called, Sean? Something. Who the fuck knows? Heavenly Choir. Something. Something. Okay, because. No, but can I just say, we've talked about this. You came on the regular show. And I think it was right after a resistance dinner party with Malcolm Nance.
About a year ago.
Yeah. Thank you. What? This is the music I hear every time I see Moby in the neighborhood. It's weird. But you wrote this Facebook post. We call Malcolm Nance Nance-dramas. Mm-hmm. But you wrote this post. How long ago was this?
I'm guessing a year ago. It was after the inauguration.
Right. Caused all this, you know.
Yeah, it took on a life of its own.
Yeah, some shit on social media. This is what Moby posted. My friend, my neighbor. After spending the weekend talking to friends who work in D.C., I can safely, well, accurately post the following. Number one, the Russian dossier on Trump is real. 100% real. He's being blackmailed by the Russian government, not just for being peed on by Russian hookers, but for much more nefarious things. Number two, the Trump administration is in collusion with the Russian government and has been since day one. Number three, the Trump administration needs a war, most likely with Iran / North Korea, whatever. At present, they're putting U.S. warships off the coast in the hope that Iran will attack one of the ships, give the U.S. a pretense for invasion, or why he's fucking poking North Korea with a stupid stick. Number four, there are right-wing plans to get rid of Trump. He's a drain on their fundraising, their approval ratings, the GOP and Koch brothers, etc. Other U.S. right-wing groups are planning to get rid of him. Number five, intelligence agencies around the world here in the U.S. are horrified by the incompetence of Trump administration, are working to present information that will lead to high-level firings and ultimately impeachment. I'm writing these things so that if and when these things happen, there will be a public record beforehand. These are truly baffling and horrifying times, as we have an incompetent president who is essentially owned by a foreign power.
Oh, my God.
Chills.
I think I also mentioned in the post, I said something about Michael Flynn, and a week later he got fired.
Yes. But, I mean, this is, right, not surprising to a lot of us what's happening now. But, who was it? Scott Dworkin, we were saying today, had tweeted about, you know, he said, a lot of my Republican friends, they don't think this is real, and then they read this, you know, the Fusion GPS testimony, and they're like, a light went on. They're like, oh shit, He's a traitor.
And, yeah, I have a feeling it's so much darker than we're even imagining.
Yeah.
I think what... I don't want to get in too much trouble, but like, I think what Trump is
When did that start?
Yeah, okay, that's true.
Okay.
What he's most afraid of is actually the stuff that he did before he even started running for president. Because, like, the people he's gotten into bed with in terms of, like, financiers and backers of his projects are, like, some of the worst people on the planet. And I wouldn't be surprised if stuff gets uncovered that involves, like, state sponsors of terrorism that he's been involved with, et cetera. Like, it's going to get...
Well, look what he just did. They just forgave Deutsche Bank. Deutsche Bank is the only one that would lend him money.
Yeah.
I mean, it's all so fucking dirty, Moby. It's all so dark. It's like, you know.
And the thing is.
And them saying we're not going to put troops in Europe because that's what Putin wants. I mean, our friend Malcolm Nance said this is the first time you can use the word treason.
Yeah. And the thing is, like, what sort of made sense is, let's say, the beginning of his administration, there were some Republicans. You know, the Susan Collins and the Murkowskis and the McCains and the Flakes and the, you know, Bob Corkers, who seemed like they were being sort of principled, rational resistance. They've all folded. If you notice, like, that you don't hear a peep from any of them.
They're all complicit or they're all being blackmailed. Which can't tell what's happening.
But
right?
It scares me a little bit because, like, do they know something we don't know? Like, is martial law an inch away? Like, why... The Republicans have to know that this is going to end badly unless they know something we don't know. Like, unless they have some weird martial law type get out of jail free card.
Yeah.
Because otherwise, why wouldn't any of them be speaking up?
Look at all these Republicans bailing, man, right? From Daryl Issa. Oh,
Daryl Issa dropping out.
On down. Like, they're bailing, and you're going, what are they? but you're right. Like, because that's what we've been saying over and over. The founding fathers could have envisioned a Trump, not an entire party complicit or obstructing justice. And you go, do they have shit on all? Because we know they hacked the RNC too. Do they have shit on all of them? Who's blackmailing them? Putin? Trump?
Or is it just simply, are the Republicans trying to get as much as they can before they all go down?
Like, that's what I think it is.
Like, do they all know? I mean, demographically, you look at the last election. So, I mean, 4 million more people voted for Hillary than Trump. So the Republicans, like, for example, I talked to a friend of mine who works at Fox News.
Yeah.
He's a senior executive there, but he's, like, actually a progressive Democrat. And he was saying, he was like, yeah, Fox News, like, our demographic is dying.
Yeah.
He's like, Fox News simply, we you know, have programming for old people who like catheters. You know, so, like, I think there's a Republican understanding, like, they've gotten all that they can, and so now they're, like, trying to, like, steal the drapes before the house gets foreclosed.
No, but they're, Moby, I believe this. They are going down. Mm-hmm. He's going to take this whole party down, which in some ways, you know, as horrible as this this outcome was, this stolen election, you go, like, well, fuck. You know, first of all, if Hillary gotten in, they wouldn't let her get anything done.
Yeah.
And secondly, like, now he's going to take this whole goddamn party down and they deserve it.
And there's precedent for it. Because, like, a lot of my friends are sort of existentially despairing, saying, like, where are we? And I was like, just look at California and New York. Right. Up until 10 years ago, New York and California had viable Republican parties.
Right.
And now, nothing.
Yeah.
You know, like, the Republican Party functionally does not exist in California and New York State. That is, as goes California, thus goes the country. You know, like, there will, unless something
Nancy
super
Pelosi,
weird happens.
My best friend, our best friend from the party, you remember.
Mm-hmm.
But she just said that this blue wave starts in California. She was talking about ISA, but it really, and it isn't it, when you think about, like, these resistance dinner parties we've been at, it's fucking fierce, man. Not just Pelosi, Ted Lieu, Adam Schiff. Right, I mean, our California, Kamala Harris, Gavin Newsom. It's
you've thrown some good parties. There was that one in particular where I was like, "How is this real?" There are 20 people in your living room. There's Stephen still singing "Find the Cost of Freedom." I'm sitting next to Rob Reiner, who's crying, and there's Nancy Pelosi getting emotional, and Ted Lieu and Adam Schiff are waiting in the wings to talk. I was like,
wasn't it a moment when we all tried to act cool, like we didn't notice that Pelosi walked in? We're like,
yeah, it was.
Stephen Stills is singing for What It's Worth, and she's clapping, and we're just like, yeah, that's right. This happens, this happens every day.
And I know these are your friends, but like, and also for me, I was like, oh, I left my house at 6 p.m. At 6.01 p.m., I got to your house, you know, the 40-yard commute.
Yes.
And there's Rob Reiner and Lily Tomlin welcoming me in, like, hey, Moby, what's going on?
What's
I was like,
happening?
No, this is not right. Rob Reiner, you're a TV star. You made The Princess Bride and Spinal Tap. Why do you know who I am? Stop it.
I don't think you know what that means.
Because you're one of the cool fucking kids now. That's what's
yeah,
going on.
You're one of the cool kids, babe. Sorry.
Today, I did a bunch of interviews. I was talking to people about David Bowie.
Yeah.
Because, you know, this is the
you
week.
Said, like, what did you say? Music, I read this somewhere. Music wouldn't exist at all without David
Bowie. Well, he was my, I mean, the greatest musician of the 20th century.
Yeah.
But what's super odd is we were also really good friends.
Aww.
We were neighbors. We worked on music together. We had holidays together.
Shit.
And every time I hung out with him, which was really often, there was that little voice in the back of my head saying, this can't be happening.
Yeah.
Because I remember when I was 13 years old, my first job was caddying. And I caddied just long enough to make enough money to buy two David Bowie records when I was 14.
Wow.
And then fast forward a couple of decades, and we're having Christmas together and going on tour together. So this, it's,
come on, that's beyond cool. I mean, fuck my living room. Come on.
It's cool, but it's also probably not real. And what I mean by that is none of this is real. The truth is it's 1991.
Yeah.
And I took way too much mescaline. And I'm in the desert somewhere near Joshua Tree. And this is all a hallucination. And I'm going to come to in a few hours and be like, I just had the weirdest psychedelic dream. And George Bush Sr. is still president. You know, and Bill Clinton is thinking about running for office. You know, that is more likely than me and David Bowie being friends and sitting next to Rob Reiner while he cries over a Stephen Stills song in your living
room. Didn't you love the tweet about... Listen, it's time for us all to come to terms that the rapture has already happened and only Prince and David Bowie made the cut.
Well, I always thought that was the case.
That's true.
So I had this experience a long time ago before I got sober, and I was in the Merv Griffin International Resort Casino in Atlantic City with my then girlfriend who was a stripper, and we were drunk. Like, you know that, like, when you're so drunk, you're not even really drunk anymore. You're just like psychotic.
Right.
And we were in this casino by ourselves getting drunk, and I went to go to the bathroom, and there was this morbidly obese man picking Cheetos off the floor of the casino at 1 o'clock in the morning and feeding them to his children. And I looked at this, and all of a sudden in my psychotic alcoholic state, I was like, oh, I understand.
Oh no.
God took the chosen people and we're what's left.
See, I want the punchline to be, and that man was Donald Trump.
I do have a good Donald Trump story.
All right, please.
Can
I don't know
say,
if I can say
can
it.
Can I say my neighbor Moby's really funny? I know you don't like think of you for comedy. You think of you for music genius and amazing activism. But
go on.
You just tweeted, if Trump is a stable genius, then I'm a hair model.
The comedy and, there and being it, that I do not have hair.
And NBL All-Star, where you posted a side-by-side image of Trump labeled stable genius and yourself labeled hair model.
It's true.
Come on, you're funny. All right, go
I
ahead.
I try.
Go ahead.
Okay, so...
All right, go ahead.
Okay, so a Trump story. And this is a bad one.
Did you sign a liability waiver? Any waivers that were signed?
Do I need to... What's the legal language to...
Allegedly.
Allegedly.
This allegedly
even though I was
everybody.
There. Okay, so in college, some friends of mine invented a game called Knob Touch. And knob touch is creepy, but non-sexual. Where what
well,
you do is...
It does not sound non-sexual, my friend.
Sounds like a good time.
These men, these friends of mine in college, would take their penises out of their pants, flaccid penises, and walk around a party and get points for how many people they brushed their penis against.
Oh, that's...
Men, women, doesn't matter.
Me too,
Completely non-sexual. Totally stupid, the sort of thing you invent in college.
Okay.
One night... They were telling me about this, and they dared me to play knob touch. We're at this weird party on Park Avenue, and they said, come on, just try it. And so I've only played knob touch against one person, and that's Donald Trump.
Whoa.
No.
Wait.
All right.
No, wait.
Wait. All right.
Allegedly.
Back the fuck
allegedly.
Up.
Allegedly.
Back the fuck up on this
allegedly.
Story.
So
hang
here's
on.
here's the rest of the story. So I was very drunk. I took my flaccid little penis out of my pants and Donald Trump was standing by a staircase, and I walked by him and I brushed him with my penis. He had no idea that this happened, so he can't say slander libel because he doesn't know.
Fake news, fake news. Moby's flaccid penis never touched me.
Yeah. So that's the only person I've ever played knob touch with was wow. Donald Trump.
Wow.
But you know, if you're
you know what, that's
someone,
the most fantastic story of happy hour ever to say.
And he had no idea. Did so in a way.
Is it orange? Is the tip of your penis orange now?
It's ruined with all sorts of all right. weird things that jumped off of his suit.
I'm just
me.
Asking. Yeah. Okay, Moby. Yeah. I know in other psychic music, in other just psychic news, on November 9th you wrote, Donald Trump is a racist and a misogynist who has ruined countless businesses and will be the worst president our country has ever, ever seen. What the fuck is wrong with you? That addressed to America, I'm imagining?
Yeah, I mean, like many people, the election gave me some sort of existential pause. You know, wondering, like, it's, like, in the past, like, we remember the good old days of G.W. Bush, right?
Sure, fantastic.
He was an idiot.
Yeah.
We disagreed with him with everything. But we disagreed with him, it was like, philosophically and politically.
Right.
The thing about Republicans now, and Trump in particular, is I question their species. Like, I don't look at them and say, there's a human I disagree with.
Right.
I look at them and say,
is that human?
Is that even human? Like, if you couldn't invent anything more cartoonishly evil, they're like, we'll take money from the poor and give it to the rich. We'll destroy the environment.
Yeah.
We'll, I mean, everything they do.
It's like they're cartoon villains.
But they still have supporters. And the supporters, I don't understand. It's like this pernicious tribalism where they're so in love with their anger and the emotions they have while they're reading Breitbart and watching Fox News that any sort of like reasonable empirical criteria just flies out the window.
Yeah.
Also, they're just dumb. Like, I was reading something the other day, and this is, we're happy hour podcast, we're allowed to speak freely. You know, the average IQ in the United States, 98.
Wow.
Dear. 98. I'm assuming...
That's problematic.
Yeah. Those of us in the room, like, I'm assuming, worst case scenario, we have IQs of about 120.
Right.
You know, most of our friends, probably the super smart ones, 150. The less smart ones, 120. We're looking at an average IQ of 98. That's the average.
Yeah.
That's almost 30 points less.
We're in the Idiocracy.
And so we keep wondering, like, how do people buy into this? Why do people make these terrible decisions? Why do they believe the lies? And sometimes it's Occam's razor. You know Occam's razor? Sure. Most obvious answer to a problem.
I do,
questions.
Because my IQ is 99.
Okay. And so it's Occam's razor that, like, the obvious answer is usually the right one. People believe in Trump because they're racist and stupid.
Yeah. Well, you tweeted this. You said... I'm so confused to the fact that such a high percent of Americans are either really stupid or incredibly bigoted. I mean, there is a...
Or a little of both.
Yeah,
or a lot of both.
Say that at least that's a smaller percentage. Only 25% voted for him. He's lost a lot of that support. So you're right. There is that percentage. Yeah. Mm-hmm. But you also said I had an epiphany a few years ago. I was at a celebrity party. It suddenly dawned on me I had yet to meet a celebrity who was as smart and interesting as any of my friends.
This is why I don't really go to celebrity parties, except for, like, political celebrities in your living
Resistant
room.
Resistant parties at Stephanie's house.
My living room, yeah.
But that's interesting, because that's like...
They're like nerd parties.
I mean, like, Adam Schiff is not a celebrity for...
No, he's a nerd.
He's
like
a rock star.
Yeah. Like, he's someone who became a celebrity simply because he's smart and has integrity.
Mm-hmm. That's weird.
Yeah.
Speaking of nerds, I'm so fascinated because I don't know all of this. I just know you've used my neighbor and friend. You said, it's strange. I never really expected to have a record contract. I thought I'd spend the rest of my life making music in my bedroom that no one would ever hear.
Mm-hmm.
It's bizarre being hated by so many people I never met.
Great.
I'm relatively inoffensive. I'm not very tall. I'm not very big. I'm not very bright. I don't know how I managed to annoy so many people. But you're right. Like, social media... just makes people go, oh, you like animals? Fucking faggot. Like,
yeah.
Right?
The nicest thing, the most liberating thing is when you get to that point of not caring.
Right.
You know, like still, like no one likes to be hated, but I remember when the social media phenomena started, it really bothered me when people said or wrote mean things about me. And now I don't care? Because, yeah. like, so suppose someone in Indiana hates me, and I post something, and they write something nasty. I'm like, I'm never going to meet this person. Why would I let a complete stranger compromise the quality of my life?
Yeah.
Like, I'm going to go hiking. I'm going to go get a coffee. I'm going to hang out with my friends. I'm going to sleep right. in my nice, comfy bed. Why in the world would I let the opinion yeah. of some lunatic dimwit far away affect me?
Yeah. No, me too. I have a rhinoceros. Speaking of animals, I have a rhinoceros hide now. Because I used to be like, why would a total stranger get up and say, I hope you get cunt cancer and die before noon today? Why?
I mean, there is, to be fair, some nice alliteration there.
Yeah. Don't, I'm like, all right. So wait a minute. Let's go back.
Cunt cancer?
I know, that's a good one.
But it actually sounds like a really good name for like a great, terrible, sort of like grunge rock metal band.
They could open for Pussy Riot.
Right, yeah. Exactly.
Ladies and gentlemen, cunt cancer!
Yeah, it's really, but you're right that you know, anonymous nature of social media makes people just be really even more horrible than they probably already are.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So let's go back. You are Richard Melville Hall, ladies and gentlemen, known as Moby.
My legal name.
Yeah. American musician, DJ, record producer, singer, songwriter, photographer, animal rights activist. Photographer? Since you were 10? I didn't know that.
Yeah, my uncle had been a photographer for the New York Times. And when I was 10 or 11, he started giving me the cameras and the photo equipment he wasn't using.
Oh, wow.
So I've actually been doing photography as long as I've been doing music. But now everyone's a photographer. So, I mean, like Instagram, people take amazing iPhone pictures. I can't compete with that.
I bet you can. But so let's talk about animals because that's something we have in common. I just rescued 3 dogs from the dog meat trade in Thailand. I just went to Thailand for New Year's week, and I, mm-hmm. you know, you can put dogs on your ticket, and I went to Soy Dog Foundation, if you know it, in Thailand, because they are this amazing rescue organization that were, they were instrumental in actually getting the dog meat trade outlawed, and so it still happens, but it's mm-hmm. not legal, so they get the police to, you That's know, great. Help them intercept mm-hmm. these shipments, and we've all seen these horrible photos of, you know, them in...
Yeah.
cages all mashed together and nets and stuff, and so they intercept them and you know, so anyway, but you know, you can bring them home, and that's why, I mean, people are like, oh, wait, there's so many dogs here, why do you have to bring, I'm like, because you can't, they can't find homes in Thailand because it's so poor, they don't think of them as pets, they're either street dogs, which is what Soy means, it means mm-hmm. street dog, right, and you know, I'm like, they get kidnapped and taken to Vietnam, and I think what was the statistic I heard? They eat 1,300 dogs a day in Vietnam, in Cambodia, and Laos, and they torture them because they think that the adrenaline makes the meat taste better. And so, you know, I mean, obviously we're all animal lovers, but I mean, I had never experienced it like that. Like I went and volunteered at Soy Dog for a day, and it was mm-hmm. like, a lot of them lost limbs either from, you know, getting hit by cars because yeah. they're street dogs, or... You know, a Cambodian guy like used a machete on one dog to try to, you know, hack its leg off. And I mean, it's just stuff we can't even imagine.
And
right?
It's interesting because what you're describing is like, in a way, that emotional reaction is like one of the best parts of humanity.
Yeah. You know,
that empathy and that compassion. And like many people, I grew up with this weird paradox. You know, I grew up loving dogs and cats, but eating cows and chickens.
Yeah.
And then when I was around 19, I had this quasi-epiphany where I realized, oh, the dogs and the cats that I love have 2 eyes, a central nervous system, and a rich emotional life. And the cows that I'm eating have 2 eyes, a central nervous system, and a rich emotional life. And that's when that was 30-some-odd years ago, and that's when I became a vegan.
Yeah.
Because it's that idea of, like, extending the circle of compassion. And once you recognize that, like, every creature has the ability to suffer, it changes your worldview. Because what you're describing, it applies to dogs, it applies to cows, it applies to fish, it applies to chickens and rabbits and lambs and every, you know, all these yeah. creatures who don't need to suffer.
Speaking of which, I think our vegan food is here for Moby.
Oh.
Someone can go. It's at the front door. Okay. I ordered vegan.
There is a person out there.
Okay. Yeah, there is a person.
But that, I mean, I sometimes wonder, like, it is odd to me as a vegan animal rights activist, why that's not a more central part of, like, the progressive agenda. You know, especially not even just its impact on animals, but its impact on humanity. Yeah. You know, the statistics are so baffling. Like, 90% of rainforest deforestation is for animal agriculture.
Yeah.
45% of California's water use is for animal agriculture.
Yeah.
It just goes on and on. 50% of cancer, diabetes, heart disease, obesity, et cetera, all a result of animal agriculture.
Yeah.
And 45% of climate change is a result of animal agriculture. But in the progressive community, people still seem to avoid the discussion of it.
Yeah. You know? Well, no, I mean, listen, I'm not a vegetarian. And so but it was interesting. Moby, it was eye-opening going over there. I mean, just, and I know it's a different culture and a lot, it is so poor there. Mm-hmm. They don't think of them as pets. Like, their idea of rescue is putting them back on the street. I mean, if they're healthy and they, you know, I mean, they're doing great work in that they're doing a lot of sterilization, you know, spaying, neutering, because to reduce the problem. But, you know, again, and then people feed them on the streets. So that's how they survive. But then, you know, they're sort of susceptible to getting kidnapped for the dog meat trade because they're friendly to humans, right? Mm-hmm. And they kidnap pets. And it's, you know, but it's astounding to, and you're right. How is that any different than what we do here when I think, like, the fact that they torture them because they think the meat tastes better? Like, you know. I mean, you've posted some pictures that I was not ready for.
I try.
But I'm like, you're right. What, you know, cows, chickens, whatever it is you want to see is, you know. And I'm thinking, well, yeah, I'm a hypocrite because I don't want them to suffer and I don't kill them myself, but I'm not vegan, you know. So how would you counsel people to get to that next step where you went?
It makes me think of the quote that Obama paraphrased in his first inaugural address, and from Voltaire. Mm-hmm. We've probably heard a bunch of times. Basically, don't let the pursuit of the perfect be the enemy of the good. You know? Yeah. So it's like, do what you can now.
Right.
I mean, no one apart from Joaquin Phoenix was born vegan. You know, so it's like, I know some, for some people that means eat less meat. For some people it means just do more research and educate yourself more and look into the personal and global consequences of animal agriculture. So it's
right.
I mean, it's better to do more good than less. I mean, as self-evident as that might sound.
Yeah. Yeah. All right. We have so much to talk about. Hang on. So you've sold over 20 million records, my friend, worldwide. I mean, so how do you, because I know that we've talked about, because you're my neighbor, when do you work and how do you work? And I mean, obviously it was, it was called dance music in the 90s when you started, right? Like, what do you consider yourself in terms of?
Well, my background is weird because when I was very young, I played classical music. And then in high school, I played in punk rock bands. And I started hanging out in nightclubs in New York, and that was my introduction to hip-hop and dance music. So I guess I would describe myself as a classical musician who grew up playing punk rock who also likes electronic music.
Yeah.
So,
well, you're a genius, A. Okay, B.
A subtle genius.
No.
Genius. Sorry.
No, yeah. a stable genius. But you've also co-written, produced remix music for David Bowie, Daft Punk, Pet Shop Boys, Britney Spears, New Order, Public Enemy, Guns N' Roses, Metallica, Soundgarden. How do you do all that? Like, how do you have your own sensibility musically and know what artists of that caliber are going to need? And how do you do that for people listening that are trying to do music?
Sometimes you do it and it works out. Sometimes you do it and it doesn't work out. I mean, I know that sounds overly simple. Like, I feel like I should be like a guy who like runs a lawnmower repair shop and I'm sitting on the back porch. I'm like, well, sometimes it works and sometimes it doesn't.
What can I say?
The nice thing over time, like work, professional music work used to make me really anxious. Where I used to be like, oh no, this collaboration has to work out. This songwriting session has to work out. This album has to work out. And now I just like doing it.
Yeah.
So the nice thing now is there's no anxiety attached to it. Like, I don't expect people to buy my music. If they do, that's fine, but I don't really care. I don't tour because I hate touring. So I now have this luxury of purity where I can just work on music, put it out, and not really care what happens.
And I can walk up the street and tell you how it's going, everybody.
Yeah.
Wait, let's talk about it. You were born in the Harlem neighborhood of New York City to a medical secretary, your mm-hmm. mom, Elizabeth, and James, a chemistry professor, who died when you were only two.
Yeah.
Wow, so you don't remember him.
No, I have pictures of him, so I think I remember him, but truth, it's just pictures.
Yeah.
And then my mom, this was the 60s, so my mom became a hippie.
Yeah.
We moved to Connecticut, where we were poor white trash, you know, food stamps and welfare. She dated Hell's Angels. So I was the only child of a broke hippie dating Hell's Angels, and it was a strange way to grow up. You know, and I hated it at the time, but now I sort of believe that if you're relatively sanguine with where you are, mm-hmm. you can't be too upset about the circumstances that led you to be there.
Siblings? No.
So here's a funny story. Do you like funny stories? I assume you like funny stories.
Of course I do, Moby.
Okay. Before my mom died, right before she died.
That's funny already.
Yeah. Nothing says comedy like dead parents.
Jesus Christ.
So.
Go ahead.
So before my mom died, very dramatically, she told me that I have a half brother somewhere. Story's going to get good. Bear with it.
Okay. All right.
And I was like, wow, that's dramatic. Apparently,
is
when
it better than brushing your penis against Donald Trump?
It's in the same
because there's a bar now.
Okay, this is going to be
a flaccid
good.
Bar, man.
So she told me this. And that's very dramatic. Then she died, and I was like, wow, I have a half brother somewhere. So in 2007, Alexandra Pelosi and I were in D.C. hanging out with her mom, Nancy, who you know.
Sure, of course.
And this was when Nancy was Speaker of the House. So there was this entourage, you know.
Sure.
Everybody from, like, Ed Markey to all these journalists to Secret yeah. Service to whatever.
Yeah.
And I started talking to a journalist from Politico. Politico had just started recently in 2007. And I was drunk. And I somehow said, I have a half-brother. And I jokingly said, maybe it's Karl Rove. The same journalist then the next day wrote a funny little piece, Are Moby and Karl Rove Brothers? It gets better. 2 weeks later, I get a letter on official White House stationery, and I memorized it. It said, Dear Moby, it's not me. For one thing, I'm 17 years older than you, and I have no musical ability. Have you considered James Carville? Because he's bald and plays the guitar, too. Your pal, Karl Rove.
Wow.
That's fantastic.
So, I have a half-brother. And I know that it's not Karl Rove.
Oh, thank God.
According to
Jesus,
Karl Rove.
That'd be horrible.
Except he's funny. I mean, Turd Blossom, yeah. Evil, but like,
yeah.
At least he's got a sense of humor.
Yeah.
I feel like the old evil Republicans, you know, like the whomevers, the Cheneys, the, you know,
right.
They were terrible and evil, but at least they were funny.
Right,
like
exactly.
The new Republicans, like
yeah.
The Ted Cruzes and the et ceteras, like they're just gross. So
right.
Like,
right.
Sorry, I know.
By the way, did you
we're not
know,
supposed to judge, but they're terrible humans.
No, they're gross. Yeah. Listen, did you hear my Nancy? This party you were at, the Nancy Pelosi story. Did you hear it? Because I didn't really understand the whole what you were just talking about, Secret Service and whatever. So we were talking to her people for quite some time, and mm-hmm. I was like, "Oh, I'll leave my driveway open, you know, so you can park." Because you know they come and sweep because you know she's fucking in line to be. President. So I put one of these office chairs out there with just like a, you know, this sheet that just said Pelosi, because I thought that would be good, because I assume she'd drive her own smart car here and just
I remember walking outside before she left. There was a phalanx of official vehicles with like flashers going and everything. I was like, oh.
When I walked yeah. her out, I was like, motorcycle cops.
Yeah.
Like, police escort, limo. I was like, oh, right. And so I know one of our neighbors was like, oh, there was a lot of police activity at your house.
I'm you should like, have yeah. said like, yeah, Moby was at
I was
house.
Like, Moby stabbed someone yeah. again. You know how it is.
Yeah, I can't help myself. It's like I have stabbing Tourette's.
Fucking Moby. Jesus yeah. Christ. He stabbed a hobo in the park again.
The hobo looked at me funny, to be fair. As they do.
But anyway, all right, let's wait. So let's go on. So, right, you, this is fantastic. Wait a minute. Your name, Moby, you were given by your parents because you have an ancestral relationship to the Moby Dick author, Herman Melville.
That's correct.
What?
That's your middle name, right?
Yeah, Richard Melville Hall is my name. So I was on a date a while ago, and I was telling someone the story of how I got my name, and I said, you know, the punchline, thinking this was going to impress my date. I said, and turns out I'm related to Herman Melville. And my date looked at me like,
wait,
who's that?
Wait,
what?
And I was like, oh, man.
Oh, fuck.
Why am I single?
You dumb bitch. I love your IMDb. Moby, bald, low singing voice, black horned glasses. Those are your trademarks.
Okay. Yeah. Me and Bruce Willis.
Oh, my God. I didn't realize that your songs were played over the credits of all the Bourne
films. I've done a lot of
Bourne
film
Identity,
music.
Bourne Supremacy, Bourne Ultimatum.
That's why Malcolm likes me, Malcolm Nance.
Right.
Because the Bourne movies are sort of like CIA favorites. So he said that my song Extreme Ways, because it's in all the Bourne movies, has become the anthem of the CIA.
Wow. Okay,
I'll take it.
That's a weird friendship. It's fine. Okay. A childhood friend of Robert Downey Jr.?
Yeah, he was my best friend in third grade.
What?
Yeah. So I grew up in Darien, Connecticut, which is one of the wealthiest towns in the world, but my mom and I were poor on welfare food stamps. She was a hippie. We lived there because the schools were good. Right. And then in third grade, I met this kid, Robert Downey Jr., and his parents had moved there because the schools were good, and his mom smoked pot. So his mom and my mom became friends, and they would smoke pot together. And Robert Downey Jr. and I stayed friends. We were best friends for quite a while.
Did he fall asleep in your bed accidentally after a binge?
No, but I did see him. The last time I saw him was actually on the stairs of a nightclub in the late 90s, and he was in bad shape.
Yeah.
He's
better now, right?
Now he's sober and, like, you know, the wealthiest movie star in the world.
Yeah. Well, good for him. Yeah. What? All right. When you're not performing, you brew a variety of different tea blends? I
used to own a tea company. I don't know about brewing different tea blends, but yeah, in New York, an ex-girlfriend and I owned a tea company, and boy, was that interesting, because there's this gentle, beautiful little vegetarian tea place called Teeny, T-E-A-N-Y.
Oh,
and,
how cute.
But it was the height of both of our, like, alcohol and drug addiction. So we, like, by day, running this adorable little tea shop, and by night, like...
You're like, fuck tea.
Like yeah, what happens if you do ketamine and crystal meth and cocaine and Xanax and Vicodin crushed up and snorted and but like such lunatic behavior?
What does happen?
You just get emotional.
You brush your penis against Donald Trump.
Yeah, you just, things get soft.
Yeah, you admitted this once, that when you were 19, you tried LSD. Began suffering from panic attacks.
Yeah, that's LSD and pot or marijuana are the only two drugs I didn't like. I'm sober now, but
yeah,
all other drugs were great, too great. But LSD, and I loved other psychedelics, but LSD was just too much.
So wait, 2014? You've been sober since 2014?
Since what year is it now?
2018.
Oh, so 2008. So to 10 years.
Oh, okay. All right. This is incorrect. Also, this is interesting. You were reluctant to use the word Christian to define yourself.
Yeah.
But you identify as a Christian?
I had a good 7 or 8 years of being a very serious Christian.
Yeah.
And I love the teachings of Christ, like forgiveness, humility, compassion, which is actually one thing that has driven me a little bit insane about us, we progressives, is we've given religion to the Republicans.
Yeah.
We never question their religion. I just wanted someone to go to Ted Cruz and say, like, okay, or Paul Ryan or whomever, and say, you're a Christian. So where in the New Testament does it say you're supposed to take money from the poor and give it to the rich?
Right.
You know, where in the...
Or Donald Trump being their figurehead. You're like, really? Like, let's take back God. Let's take back family values.
And it's this lefty, namby-pamby thing of saying, like, oh, religion, we can't touch that. It's like, yes, you can. If Paul Ryan said he was a vegan and was eating hamburgers, someone would say, you know, it's inconsistent to be a vegan who eats hamburgers. Why can't we say you're a Christian? It's inconsistent as a Christian to pass legislation that takes money from the poor and gives it to the rich. It's egregiously antithetical to the teachings of Christ.
Yeah, yeah.
So me personally, I used to be a serious Christian. Now I recognize the universe is a complicated place, so I'm not dogmatic about anything except loathing Republicans.
Speaking of cults, you also are a former Dungeons & Dragons player. Now,
sure, everyone is.
Nerd. I'm sorry. Sorry.
Yeah, you got a nerd in your throat?
Yes, I did have a nerd in my throat. What is that? What is Dungeons & Dragons exactly?
It's a role-playing game. It's like the original role-playing game, 20-sided die. You have little characters.
All right.
It's what Billy in Texas plays.
Oh, okay.
Except he dresses up for it.
Oh, okay.
It's also a precursor to success. People such as Bill Gates play Dungeons & Dragons.
All right. Oh, it's a nerd thing. Okay, yeah. I got it. All right. Now...
No, it's not a nerd thing. It's really cool.
It's really cool, Moby?
Yeah.
Sounds great. Mm-hmm. So excited for you, honey. Listen, so what are your predictions on Trump-Russia? Because I had Malcolm Nance on today, our friend, and it is hard, isn't it? Because what was the latest thing today? Trump said, oh, no, I'm not going to talk to Mueller. Like,
there's no collusion, so why should I be interviewed?
It's anyone's guess. As we all know, guess and assume, there's so much dirt. And what amazes me is he will go up and say, like, you know, clearly there's no collusion and there's no evidence of collusion. I was like, the following names, Carter Page,
right,
Paul Manafort, et cetera, Michael Flynn, it just goes on and on. Like, these are all high-ranking people in his administration, the people who ran his campaign, and they're all either indicted or clearly being investigated.
Yeah.
But yet the media is sort of like, oh, we'll take his word on it. It's like, you're taking the word of a sociopathic, pathological liar, and you're ignoring all the evidence. Not you personally.
Yeah.
Some of the media. And it's mind-boggling. It reminds me in a weird way of the X-Files. We all like the X-Files, right? Yeah. One of the things that drove me crazy is, like, in one episode, Scully would be attacked by aliens, and the next episode she'd be like, oh, I'm not sure if I believe in aliens. I was like, come on. You're what? Like, there's evidence. You stop it. And the same thing with the media now. Like, there's this overwhelming mountain of evidence that the Trump campaign was run by the Russians.
Yeah.
Total collusion, up and down, inside and out. But the media still, maybe they're holding on to it because they want the tension of the story.
Yeah, yeah.
But it's just so weird. So it's going to get super dark. And the more it goes into, like, was it Wilbur Ross and, like, Deutsche Bank and that Bank of Cyprus and all that stuff. Like, it's gnarly. There is drug money. There's terrorist money. There's gnarly, gnarly stuff in there. And it's not, I don't think it's just going to, it's not going to be like, oh yeah, sure, he was in collusion with the Russians. I think it's a lot darker than
that. I do too. Speaking of things that make me hot, what's going on with your dating life?
Nothing.
What's happening?
Nothing. You know, here, this is.
What can we do for you? Because I want to be the flower girl in the Moby wedding on the corner.
By the way, I know that this is not a visual medium, but there's a, as you said, that this giant dog.
Because he knows that you're an animal lover.
So sweet and dumb.
So what are you?
Smart.
Are you
smart? No, and dumb,
wait, ever been married? Ever?
No.
Didn't want kids? Nothing.
No, I really like activism and making music and going hiking.
Yeah. Well, that's me and you. If was only that? I like penis.
Yeah.
That's the only kind of meat I don't like. I'm sorry. I'm sorry. I am so sorry.
That's okay.
Moby.
No, that was good.
That was inappropriate.
See, here's, as a vegan, I'm not offended by vegan jokes. What I'm offended by is people telling the same vegan joke.
I understand.
So that was actually a good one.
Thank you.
Someone, if another person says, like, vegan, don't you miss bacon? I was like, that's not a joke. And no, I don't. But that's not, like, if you're going to make the anti-vegan jokes, be funny and I'll laugh.
Just do something. Yeah.
So dating, no, you know, the last relationship I had ended August 2017.
All right.
So it's been about 15 months. And in that time, nothing, no dating.
Yeah.
So it's, so I'm very monastic.
Listen.
I'm a sober vegan who doesn't date. And I spend my time, like, hiking, thinking about God. Like,
I remember the first time I asked you the happy hour, you're like, I'm a sober vegan. I have no fun.
Yeah, I really am
not. But you are incorrect. This was fantastic fun.
Oh, thanks. Kind of you to say.
Ladies, I'm sure, like, ladies, I'll leave. Single. Let's go. Let's get this done.
I'll leave and you'll be like, clearly we can delete that entire.
No. Oh. No.
It's just for the Donald
no,
Trump.
No, we've
nod
and
touch.
I've heard you've had stalkers. I have too. So we can help each other security wise and dating.
I had a really crazy stalker. I've had a lot of stalkers, but this one in particular.
Trish, like, can tell you about mine. Go ahead.
Mm-hmm. I had this one. She. Put,
this is why there's video surveillance here. Go ahead.
She put tennis skirts on my trees.
What? Why? Yeah,
that was when she was being fun. Then it got a little more violent. Then it she got started weird. Like
then
sending me
weird.
Death threats and like attacking the police.
Oh dear.
You know.
So that was the tennis skirts was the good phase.
That was the good phase, and then it degenerated. And like yeah. I would come out, and she would be like rummaging through my plants outside my gate, trying to make sure the spiders didn't attack. Like, yeah. True. And you're like, oh.
You hate that in your tennis skirt.
There are
no one wants
crazy
spiders.
People in the world. Yeah.
No one wants spiders in their tennis skirts, Moby. So, listen, all right, time for you to have a little vegan food and skedaddle up 40 yards.
Okay.
How do we follow you and worship you and support all your causes? Little Pine Restaurant here in Los Angeles is Moby's restaurant, vegan restaurant, and he gives proceeds to amazing things.
100% of the profits go to animal rights organizations. This year, 2017, I combined my charitable giving with it, and we were able to give $350,000 to animal rights groups.
Fantastic. Oh, neighbor. All right. I'm gonna pay for your Uber home. I love you, Moby. Thanks for all your everything. Awesomeness, genius, musical genius, and political activism, outspokenness, patriotism, fucking awesomeness.
And right back at you.
Thank you, baby.